Okay, now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening. Let's give a warm welcome to Cliff R. from Oceanside.
Okay. Hi, my name's Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. Good 10-minute talk. I don't care if it took 20 minutes. It was a hell of a good 10-minute talk. You got it all in. You're so good-looking, I don't know what the hell you said anyway. But I'm a good watcher. I'm a good watcher. And our story is very similar. Same kind of family, and we didn't have any Germans. We were all Irish, and they're all dead. They all died of alcoholism. My mother was on Skid Row in Los Angeles and fell down a flight of stairs and broke her neck in a drunken stupor. She was 43 years old. And, you know, as you said, anybody who can read the last 15 years know there's definitely some kind of a genetic influence there somewhere. But when I was new, there was a wonderful man in the old timers here, I remember, a judge up in, he was on the coast up here, Oxnard. And he was a Superior Court judge, and he had about 25 years when I got sober. My sobriety date is the 13th of January, 1970. And my home group's the Carlsbad AA workshop, and my sponsor's Don Popejoy. But anyway, this guy's name was Dick Heaton. And I did a lot of surfing in those days when I was new. And I would surf there in Ventura. Then I would go to the courthouse and knock on the back door, and a girl would let me in. And this Superior Court judge, because he knew I was a newcomer, he'd get off the bench, come back and visit with me. And he was the international president of Mensa. That's the smart people's club. You know. I learned to spell it about 3 years ago. He was the president of Mensa. And he and this other brilliant guy had studied alcoholism. They were drinking at the time. And these two brilliant guys from Mensa studied alcoholism for 2 years. They almost died. And they came to the conclusion that alcoholism is caused by drinking. Good enough for the president of Mensa. It's good enough for me. I'm an alcoholic because I drink. And I was never a good drinker. I don't know about you. I was always a bad drinker. Nobody, when I said I was going to AA, nobody said, oh, no. So, oh, that's too bad. Get the silver out, honey. He's going. I had a lot of fun drinking. You did, too. You wouldn't be here. I had a lot of good times drinking. Well, I'm not talking about the Al-Anons. I know about them. You married guys, you remember that? Don't you think you had a few too many? No, you had a few too few. That's your problem, lady. Have a couple and loosen up, for God's sakes. Mine was a counter. They're the worst kind, aren't they? Three Al-Anon counters. That's your fifth one today. Shut up and eat your breakfast and leave you the hell alone. I was raised in this Irish Catholic family. Oh, really? Yes, honest. And my father had been a professional fighter. One time, the leading candidate for the middleweight championship of the world. One of the toughest men that ever lived. His brother, Jack, was a huge man and was tougher than my father. And he used to clean out a whole saloon just for a lark. Just wipe the whole bar out, you know. And I was about 5'11", you know, and had a back problem, big yellow streak down the middle. And, but, you know, when you're raised in that environment, you want to be tough. You want to be tough. And so alcohol really helped that a lot. I mean, when I drank, I could be brave. I thought brave and tough were synonyms. No. I became one of the greatest beating takers of all time. I took legendary beatings. And I was proud of them. My favorite one was that we were in Long Beach. Four other guys and I went to Long Beach to have a good time. And I woke up in the morning in this flea bag hotel there in Long Beach. I thought I was blind. I had bled face down on this pillow all night. So when I come up, the pillow came with me. And I'm terrified. I'm smothering in there. And there was a sink in the corner. And this other guy and I threw water on the pillow for about, almost drowned then. Finally went, there was a big mirror on the dresser. I said, put the pillow back. Oh, my God, I looked like Quasimodo. But I'll never forget the four guys who were with me. They said, you were great, Roach. You got up 19 times. The kind of friends I had my whole life. I don't know about you. But as I said, I met this pre-Al-Anon in college. In February, if we make it, we'll be married 60 years. I assume you're applauding her. She'd probably say, thanks a lot. But we met in college. She was down on Skid Row looking for an alcoholic to abuse her. And if you wish to be abused, you got your boy here. I'll grab you. And we entered this 20-year suicide pact. And we had a dual disease. Any of you have that dual disease? We had alcoholism and Catholicism. And we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes. What it seemed like to me, you know. Every time I come out of a blackout, who in the hell is that? You know? And they're all right when they're little, but they grow, you know. Like kittens, they grow. And the older they got, the weirder they got. God knows the weirder she got. And how's the head nut? And for those of you who are new here tonight, you know, you think an alcoholic is some guy lying on a park bench with a bottle of wine and a brown paper bag. And it's not necessarily so. The experts in alcoholism, wherever the hell they are, I always thought an expert on alcoholism is a guy who has a doctorate who drinks. They become experts on alcoholism. They say that 95 to 97% of us who die of the disease of alcoholism, who become dead from alcoholism, are people like me. See, I'm a functioning alcoholic. I'm one of those guys that gets up every day and goes to work and does the job and does it better than you. Who does it better than anybody? I'm a goer and a doer and an achiever. I'm a functioning alcoholic. My buddy at home says a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. Don't tell that in Al-Anon meeting. That makes them go. So, in spite of the fact that I'm just a terrible drunk, when I had blackouts, I would be beaten up and I'd wreck cars, go to jail. Finally, I became a school teacher. And for the first 3 years, I taught up in a town in the San Joaquin Valley called Manteca. I don't have to go to purgatory now. And then we moved to Oceanside in 1961. We had four kids by then. We had another one in the basket. And so I became spent my whole career, then 30-some years, as a teacher in the Oceanside District. I was a high school teacher, and I was a damn good one. It's the only thing I'm going to brag about tonight. I was a good teacher. I loved the kids. Kids loved me. You know, I just, one of those things where I could do it. And somebody asked my wife one time, why is your husband such a good high school teacher? She said, well, he's a very well-educated adolescent. Don't you hate it when they're accurate and cruel? You know. But anyway, I, being a macho guy, as I already intimated, as soon as I got to Oceanside, I became a surfer dude. I loved surfing. I surfed till I was 74 years old. You should have seen me that last couple of years under. A lot of kids loved me. They loved me. Mr. Board's back on his board. There you go. But this other surfer dude teacher and I, we got a chance to open a surfboard shop there in Oceanside, right on the beach. The mayor of the town had this little building, and he gave it to us to use. We didn't have to pay anything. It was all beat up, and you know, we had to repaint it, put window in, got a refrigerator. A few months later, we got some surfboards, too. Yeah. Oh, can you imagine a couple of budding drunks? We had these two chaise lounge chairs. We'd sit there every evening and watch the sunset. We became sunset connoisseurs. We measured sunsets by martinis. I was a mixer. I said, looks like about an 8 tonight, Woody. You know, the best, we had a 15 martini sunset. Oh, you should have seen it. It was glorious. And the sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. You remember that? I think that should be on the 20 questions. Ever had a sunburned mouth? Ah, get the hell out of here. You ain't ready yet, pal. Come back when you're ready. Guy in Texas I talked with, he said, have you ever been run over by your own car while you were driving it? That would be good on the 20 questions, too. In February of 1965, I went down to the shop to repair a board. Sunday morning, I had a hangover, no kidding. I went to the refrigerator to see if there was a Coke or something in there. And my buddy Woody had been there the night before, and he left about this much vodka and a half-pint bottle. And I had this terrible hangover. I was not a morning drinker, but I went to the refrigerator, and I saw a little bit of vodka in the refrigerator and some orange juice, and I thought that would put the fire out. So I mixed up that little dinky drink and drank it down and went on about my business. And I'm sanding the board, getting ready to, the resin's cooking there. That little half a shot of vodka got in my system. You know how it'll do? Gets in the bloodstream. Bloop. And my mind talked to me after about 20 minutes. My mind said, shame on you, Cliff. Shame, shame. That was Woody's booze you drank. You're ahead of me. Why don't you go to the liquor store? Get old Woody a pint. It's the kind of guy I am. You know? That afternoon I got Woody a fifth. And I just ended up, my dad called it, boring-eyed drunk. Crawled home on my hands and knees 11 blocks. Fell in the bed, got up the next morning, called Ralph. Remember him? Ralph. For an inordinate amount of time. Came out and she was standing there. I said, I got to do something about my drinking. I'm getting drunk when I don't even mean to. And she had cut this little thing out of the paper about the ANA. Don't know why she thought to do that, dude. So she was looking at me, so I called AA. The guy came out and got me, and I went to meetings for a few days. And I realized I'd been hasty. Kind of jumped the gun here, you know what I mean? I'm sorry, I'm highly educated. I have degrees on my degrees. And these people seem to have the collective IQ of an orange. I tried to help them, for God's sake. About the third night, I'm laying a little Nietzsche on them, and this guy said, hey, we keep it simple here. I said, no, really, Leroy, you could have fooled me. And so I resigned from AA. And for the next 5 years, I was an AA loser. I was a smart aleck, overeducated, pompous jerk, loser who sat in the back of the room and smirked with that loser smirk. Can't even do it anymore. I used to have the head bobbed down and everything. Oh, did he? And I would come to AA for 40 days and then be drunk for 2 years. Now, that's a slip. Then I'd come to AA for 30 days and be drunk for a year and a half. And you read chapter 3 tonight. When we got sober, they always read chapter 3. Not many meetings do it anymore. When they start reading the tradition, they quit. That's too bad, because if the newcomers were listening, you'll stay here, wouldn't you? I remember this guy came up to me in Fallbrook one time. He said, "Will you listen to chapter 3? Will you listen?" He had tears in his eyes, you know. I said, "Okay." So they read chapter 3 and I listened. And they said, "Alcoholics of our type." I'm a different type. I was drunk for 2 more years. So I just was a terrible AA loser, but I always functioned. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this time, I weighed 163 pounds, had 4% body fat, used to surf for like 3 hours, and then get out and run 5 miles, could bench press 285, took me 25 minutes to pass a mirror. Don't ask me for directions, I said, it's right over. And I was one of the top 3 debate coaches in the United States. That's an honor roughly equivalent to be one of the top 3 prostitutes in Elko, Nevada. I became a top debate coach by mistake. The principal talked me into bringing some kids down here to San Diego State for a debate tournament, which I knew nothing about. And we got killed. We got slaughtered. We got driven into the dirt. And I went in the coach's room, and they were all pals. They'd been doing this for years. And they snubbed me. And one guy there, the guru of the coaches, he had beautiful silver hair, kind of like yours. Beautiful hair. It took 9 barbers to get it right. You know, they have a $1,000 suit on. The other coaches did this when they went in front of him. This gray-haired guru turns to me about 2 p.m. and said, "Where are you from?" God, I was grateful to be spoken to. I said, "Oceanside." And he said, "Oh, where's that?" 30 miles up the road. He gave me a resentment. And I went back to Oceanside High and I built me a speech team. I built a juggernaut speech team, is what I did. I built a powerhouse speech team, and I did it with sheer hatred. You got any idea how hard that is to make 150 people do what they don't want to do? I mean, that'll wind you up. I'm in their faces all day screaming and yelling, "Coaching!" The reporter asked my captain one time, "What's the secret of your coach's success?" The kid said, "Terror." Oh, man, that'll wind you up. And so I'd go from 7 in the morning till 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, full speed, full bore, nothing to eat, 400 cups of coffee, and pissed off all day. In the glove compartment of the car waiting for me is a 1/2 pint of hot vodka. I love to talk about hot vodka at Al-Anon meetings. They go, "Hey, isn't he?" But you and I know, don't we? You know, they just lie there in a glove, unopened. I never touched it all day. I'm a functioning alcoholic. They would call to me, "Go get him, Cliff, baby. I'm waiting, darling." And I'd finish with the last kid in the evening, and I'd lurch out to that 58 Chevy, my surfing car. One time I was drunk, I painted it with house paint. Everything was crushed on, you know, just smashed. One light, one light. Just, I come to one of those 4-way stop signs, everybody go, I get in the car, and the only car left in the parking lot, 10 o'clock at night, I open up that hot vodka, and I don't know if you did this or not, but I always drank the half pint. Just, blah, 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 blah. Oh, is there anything like hot vodka, huh? Into the bloodstream. I puff on my stogie. Damn, I'm a good coach. And I'd finish that 1/2 pint, and I'd sit there in the darkness of that, in that 58 Chevy, and I would have my 8 minutes. Now, I don't know what your story is. If you come to Carlsbad on Thursday night, I'll listen to your story. I sit in the front row, and I pay attention all the time. But this is my story. In my case, after I drink about 1/2 hour, something happens to me And I have about 8 minutes where everything in my life is all right. I am enough for about 8 minutes. I never once told you about the 8 minutes. All the 5 years I was in and out of AA, I never once told. Now, that's the only peace of mind I'd ever known, and I thought was ever to know. I was crazy when I was 4 years old, and I've always been crazy. I lived on the edge of psychosis my whole life. I lived by anger and resentment and violence, and most of all, I lived by fear. I was afraid of everything. But if you'd have told me I was afraid, one of us would have had to die. Because when you're afraid to let them know you're afraid, that's tough. And then I would have my 8 minutes and I'd drive home and destroy my family. We had 5 kids. We're talking about the very late 60s now. The late 60s, 3 of my kids were in high school in the late 60s. My oldest son is working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. Never had to give him any spending money, I'll guarantee you. Hit him up for a fifth about once a week. Yeah, Dad, what did he eat? You know. He had hair down to his ass. You know, his head went like this all the time. Called his mother, man. Hey, man, what's for dinner? Oh, he was a pimp. You should have seen. He loved LSD. They're really strange, those guys. You ought to know, yeah. But I'd be right in the middle of a sentence. He'd say, what was that? What was that? Of course, the shape I was in, I said, I don't know. What was it? Where? My drunken mother-in-law lived with us, and she would say, I'll explain it. My oldest daughter's in a sick relationship with this nut. My middle daughter was 14, working on her story. 2 little kids just wet the bed and walked in the walls. They didn't know what the hell was going on. No human power could have relieved my family. We were all crazy. Everybody in that house was insane. And everybody in that house hated everybody else in that house. No human power could have relieved my family. But AA and Al-Anon have relieved my family. But anyway, I destroyed my family, but I built that speech team. And after a couple of years, we won one of those speech tournaments. But I just say to the gray-haired guy, it wasn't time yet. And we know when it's time, right? I think revenge is better than Christmas. Then the next year, there were 12 or 13 tournaments, 30 schools. We took first place in all 12 tournaments. But I can wait. The next year, there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in the tournament. And my team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to the gray-haired guy. Remember him? I put my nose right against his and I said, do you know where Oceanside is now? He just looked confused. He said, what are you talking about? I said, don't you remember 4 or 5 years ago? You said to me, Oceanside, where's that? And he said, we just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was. Story of my goddamn life. Right there. This guy's down here in San Diego every night in his bed. I'm up in Oceanside. I'll get you, Roger. Right after that, my wife and I had this main event, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. Our neighbors never got television until after I got sober. They didn't need it. You know? Weren't you? We were always the entertainers. Hey, he's coming back! He's coming back! They all had those Venetian blind marks on their forehead. But that night, I threatened to move out, and they all said, yeah, go for it! I'm living down at the beach with my surfboard where I wanted to live anyway. And I'd said for years if I'd get rid of that witch. and those long-haired, dope-feet children, I'd be okay. And I wasn't, and I went by the house one afternoon and harangued my wife about money. And the hashish salesman was kind of bobbing in the background there. And I turned to him and I said, "Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house?" And my 16-year-old son looked me right in the eye, and he said, "It's beautiful." And I didn't know it for a couple of hours, but that's my bottom. That's as far as I'm going. I lost the respect of a 16-year-old kid. And what I realized after I went back to that dump on the beach, I had lost my own self-respect a long time before that. And I sat out there on a screen porch and I watched what is still to this day the most beautiful sunset that I have ever seen. And about the time the sun was going down into the water, I had what I assume you had. I had that moment of clarity our big book talks about. I saw myself. And I went in the bedroom and dug out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had read it in one of my travels through the program, and I thought it was very poorly written. But it read really well this time. And I read the big book. If you're new, I read it for 3 days and 3 nights. I called in sick. I didn't go to work. I read the big book cover to cover. Read all the stories. Read the appendix in the back. And in the second edition, there was a story called The Professor and the Paradox. He's in the new book, Experience, Strength, and Hope. He was another egotistical school teacher, and he saved my life. On the third time through the book, on the 13th of January, 1970, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on page 63 again. And on page 63, for you newcomers, there's a little prayer, and it's step 3. And I've always called it the formal terms of surrender. And I knelt down on the filthy linoleum floor, exactly the pattern of the linoleum floor up here. Only this one's clean. It's exact pattern. And I knelt down and I read the third step prayer out loud to myself right out of the book. I read, "God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self." I've heard probably 200 fifth steps in my years in the program. And the number one defect of character of every single man I've ever worked with is self-obsession. I build a prison in here. I build a wall, I guess, to keep you out, and all I did was build a prison to keep me in. I didn't have the foggiest idea why, and I don't care why. I heard Peggy talk when I was new, and she said, "Alcoholism is the only prison where the locks are on the inside." And my little sponsor said, "Because you're a brilliant intellectual, we numbered them for you." Why? And something happened to me on my knees that morning. And for 32 years, I tried to tell you what happened to me. And I couldn't. And then, when I was 32 years sober, this little girl in the grapevine, she was 17 when this happened to her, and she was 22 when she put the grapevine article. And she'd done exactly what I had done 32 years before. She was in this treatment center, and they gave her a book, and she was reading it. And she knelt down and read the third step prayer out loud to herself, as I had done. And she said in the grapevine article, "I was engulfed by a great laughing love." That'll work for me. That really works for me. And that night, I'm knocking on Bill Blake's door. He was a little step Nazi there in Carlsbad. You know, he's one of those guys when you're new, he pounces on you with those big yellow teeth. Always trying to help me, and I couldn't stand the guy. But isn't it funny, that night I'm knocking on his door, and I'm a five-year loser in and out, obnoxious, overeducated, pompous ass loser. And Margie, Bill's wife, opened the door, and here I am on the porch. If you don't hear anything tonight from me, newcomers, hear this. I have never seen anyone so glad to see me in my life. Margie just lit up. "Oh, Cliff! Oh, come in!" In the house, I go, pours me a cup of coffee. "Oh, this is wonderful," she said. "Oh, this is great. Bill's been crazy lately. He's had nobody to work with. Oh, this is so great." Then Bill comes in. "Ah, Cliff!" Half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I can do to help you folks out? glad to help any way I can. Which was the last nice thing the man ever said to me, as long as he lived. He was very cruel to me. He was vicious. Thank God. Thank God. That's what I needed. If you're a newcomer and you need tender, loving care, stay away from me. Boy, he was so... The nicest thing he said to me the first 5 years was, "Shut up! Shut up!" I told him, "I have degrees, you know." He says, "So does the thermometer. You know where they stick that sometimes." I thought the first step was, "Shut up and get the car!" Now I'm almost 40 years sober and I couldn't realize that's the first step. Just shut up and get in the car. In the back seat on the hump. That works too, right? I mean, if you're the guy in the back seat on the hump, you become a newcomer. You look for a newcomer. Hey, come with us. I'm on the window now, baby. He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. You want to talk about love? He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. I thought everybody went every night because he never told me any different. And we went all over Southern California. First it was just me. Then within a couple of years, there were 8 or 9 of us, 2 carloads. We went everywhere. He took me to meetings like this one. He took me to meetings where people are laughing. Because I can't live without the laughter. I'm sorry. I sponsor guys, not John. Who drove me down here. And Barbara. He's my favorite. Tonight. But then we had the old carloads of guys. We'd go to these meetings where people were laughing. And I get me a new guy now. I always take him to a meeting and then take him to another meeting. You know, maybe the 12th or 13th or 14th meeting. You're sitting there by this newcomer and he goes, "Gotcha!" And I don't care. Hey, Harry Allen, once we get you laughing, we gotcha. My wife and I get these brand little newcomer Al-Anons. We take them to AA speaker meetings like this. You don't get her in between us where she can't escape. And the guys up here going, "Ha, ha, ha. I fell in the Christmas tree and smashed all the presents." No, wrong way. This new little Al-Anon sitting there. Not funny to her. So we take her to another meeting tomorrow night. One night she throws her head back and laughs. And I don't care who you are, once we got you laughing, we got you. That, to me, is the spiritual part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was new, I had a lot of bad problems in my life, and I whined about them, and I had nervous breakdowns, and I'd tell my sponsor all about it, sob through the whole story, and he would always listen, never interrupted me. You know how they are. I found it's good to make a noise once in a while. They think you're paying attention. But I'd get all finished with my sad story, and he would say, "Go get Al and take him to the meeting." What has that got to do with my children on drugs? What's that got to do with I owe $1 billion and I have no money? What's that got to do with my wife despises me? So I go get Al and take him to the meeting. And I hated him. He's a big blowhard. And he had no driver's license, of course. So I'd drive and listen to his blah, blah, blah all the way there. And we'd set the meeting up. And people would come. The meeting would be over. We'd set the meeting down. We'd watch the coffee. Put him in the car. Drive him home. Blah, 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 blah. And I'd let Al off. And I'd start driving home. And this feeling would come over me. Start right here. And then it would just spread out. Terrifying. It felt so good. Better than the 8 minutes ever was. It only lasted like 40 seconds. You know. I thought I got rid of Al. But no, he made me stand at the door and greet people like that lovely lady was doing tonight. And made me mop up your spilled coffee. He took me all his 12-step calls. And I got to watch the light come on in men's eyes. I got to see guys clean up and get their driver's license back and get a job. And I got to watch that happen. I sponsor a guy who's sober 35 years. And I gave him a cake this last year. And I got to see the light come on in his eyes. And I've seen it happen hundreds and hundreds of times. There's people in this room who know exactly what I'm talking about. If you've done that, you know there's a higher power. You know that. You pick up some dirty, filthy guy and take him to a meeting. Take him to a coffee shop after the meeting. Look across the table and the power's in his eyes. That night, hundreds and hundreds of times, that night. What a power that is. And so he made me do all this stuff that I thought was stupid, and I kept feeling better and better. You know, I was sober about 2 years, coming up on a two-year cake. I couldn't sleep one night. Does that sound familiar? So I was reading the big book. Of course, the manual's a lot better. The service manual's great if you have insomnia. Oh, two pages, you're gone. But I'm reading the book. About 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, nobody's up. I'm reading the book, and I mean, I get to the bottom of page 83 and the top of page 84. Now, I've been through the book about 6 times by then because my sponsor had pages you had to read. I'm almost 2 years sober. And I saw them. I saw the promises. Now, I think I saw them because after 2 years I had done enough of what we call service here. I had done enough of that to where it had started to happen in my life. So I saw them. It said I was going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. It said I wouldn't be afraid of what happened yesterday. It said I would be able to handle situations which used to baffle me. Like life. And in the middle of the promises, it's how they happen. Right in the middle, that sneaky Bill Wilson, he puts them right in the middle where you don't notice them. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. Then my favorite line in the whole book, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Now, I taught English. Bill loved grammar. And he knew, and I know, that's not grammatical. It should read, these feelings of uselessness and self-pity. He knew exactly what he was talking about, didn't he? That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. You show me a loser, I'll show you somebody doesn't want to do jack for Alcoholics Anonymous. Mother Teresa was in this area a lot of years ago. She had a heart attack. And one of the doctors took care of was a friend of mine who's a cardiologist. And he said, Cliff, you couldn't be in the room with the woman and not know she was a spiritual being. And this reporter asked her this question, and it was in the paper, her answer. And I cut it out and carried it until it just turned yellow and rotted away. What she said to the reporter was, the fruit of faith is love. And the fruit of love is service. And the fruit of service is peace. I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will know peace. And the fruit of service is peace. I'll tell you about my kids before I sit down. My youngest son, when I was back the first 20 years I was sober, I did a lot of service, formal service. I was the GSR and the DCM. I did the whole alphabet, for Christ's sake. And I ended up being the delegate for this area. Panel 26 was about a year before the Ice Age. But my buddies used to kid me. You know, they were doing other stuff. And they'd say, oh, here comes the AA politician. How's the politics at AA, Cliff? They were just kidding. But I used to say to my buddies all those years ago, I used to say, I do this because I want AA to be here for my kids. If they need it. And I want it to be AA. I don't want it to be some watered down, psychologized bullshit. I want it to be the program the little electrician gave to me. And if you're new tonight, that's the program, newcomers. 1 through 12. Everything else is fellowship, and I love the fellowship. That's the program. Whether you be AA or whether you be Al-Anon. 1 through 12. That's the program. And so I said I wanted to be here for my kids if they need it. My youngest son, Chris, has 21 years of sobriety. My middle daughter, Jan, had 12 years of sobriety and got a bad back and started taking some of that hard liquor, you know. And, well, I have no opinion on pills. They'll cut you off from the sunlight of spirit and kill your ass dead, but I have no opinion on whatsoever. Put that on the tape. I have no opinion. But, of course, she drank again. Now she has 7 years again, and she's doing well. She had cancer this last year, breast cancer, and I went through every single chemo with her. I owe her that. And she had both breasts taken off and, you know, new ones put on, and they're bigger than the old ones. She's kind of proud of that. But the year 2008 was the worst year of my life. So, you know, just because you're sober a long time doesn't mean life smooths out. 2008, I found out I had heart failure. You know, I'd rather say heart trouble, but the doctors say failure. And so I'm loaded up with pacemakers, but I'm fine. But I found out I had heart failure. My daughter got cancer, and we went, you know, it was a horrible year. But we got through it. With AA and with Al-Anon, we got through it. By the way, my wife and my daughter, Kitty, my daughter's talking up in Vancouver, Canada this weekend for Al-Anon.
Wow.
They've done the program. Changed their lives. They're nothing like anything like they used to be. Changed their lives. And then the hashish salesman, he's got almost 8 years. He's one of the leading experts in the world on the growing of coffee. The beats the hell I want it used to grow. But he goes all over the world. He goes to third world countries and he studies the soil and the plants they have of coffee. And he decides what has to be brought in and crossbreed. And then the volunteers follow him in. And these people don't have to be third world countries anymore. So he goes to meetings in South America, Central America, Mexico. He speaks Spanish fluently. He just got back from Africa. One of his favorite meetings in the world is in Zambia, Africa. He gets there about 6 times a year and says, Dave's here. Now we have 7. Now I envy him being able to do all of that, but I'm glad I don't have to do that flying. You know. But anyway, he's sober and he's a wonderful AA. He works really hard in AA. My eldest daughter, Kitty, went wrong. She's been in Al-Anon 25 years now. And she said, well, when I drink too much, I get sick. My youngest said, you can get through that, for God's sake. Like you miserable failure. So I would put my family today against any family in the world. AA and Al-Anon. When we get together, it's just wall-to-wall laughter. Wall-to-wall love. We don't have to be anything for each other. We just have to love each other and have a good time. Can you imagine that? But 15 years sober, my wife walked across the room to me at Christmas. Everybody's laughing at you. She said, how did we get here from there? That's how we got here in AA and Al-Anon. I don't know if anybody in this room really needs me. But I want to tell you one thing for sure. I sure as hell need you.